5208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Film Fracas. I'm your host, Carter Spilliards.
Yeah.
And with me are my other three co-hosts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got... I'll do you last. Yeah. We've got, on my left, Shannon Laura fucking Dern Widener.
That is a quote.
I'm going to pick new Oscar winners this time.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's the first one we're recording since the Oscars happened.
It's been a while for us. Not for you guys. It's been a week for you guys.
Yeah.
But for us, it's been like two or 3 weeks. It's been a bit.
Yeah.
Phoenix. Artificial inseminated cow Zarola.
Wow.
I didn't watch the Oscars actually happening, so I just saw all the memes.
Did you just equate Phoenix to Joaquin Phoenix to inseminated cows?
Yes.
Okay. That was your train of thought in your brain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I knew I wanted to do a Joaquin Phoenix thing, and then, of course, what comes to mind.
Yeah.
Inseminated cows. And then we'll do Robbie, not so marriage story, DeShazer.
Ooh, the opposite, the inverse.
Because you don't want it to be what happens in Marriage Story.
Absolutely not.
Oh, thank you.
See, it's a compliment.
Thank you.
Robbie got engaged.
Got engaged.
Yeah.
He's being an actual adult among all of us.
Apparently. But I still host two podcasts.
You're doing grown up
child.
Just now getting it.
I don't have a rock.
He does carry around a rock.
Yeah.
It's just a piece of granite he picked up off the ground.
She got a ring. I got a lightsaber.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's a fair trade.
Yeah.
There's a big difference in price there.
We're not going to worry about that. It's the experience.
It is. It's worth the experience. It's a lightsaber.
She got engaged and you got to go to Galaxy's Edge.
She also got to go to Galaxy's Edge.
And you also got engaged.
I guess that's true.
Exactly. It's the best of both worlds.
It is. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Well.
All right. What are we talking about this
week? So today, you know, it's the penultimate episode, which
means that Penn and Teller are here.
And they are
ultimate.
Ultimate in their final form. It's where they swap places. Teller talks a lot and Penn is quiet. For anyone who's listened to this podcast before, you know that our penultimate episode is always about score.
Writing. Oh, yeah. Score.
You want to tell us about score, Phoenix?
Yeah, it's like the audio part. It's like music and there's like...
Music?
When one basketball team puts the basketball in the hoop,
they score.
Exactly. No. There's a composer that composed the music for the movies and we like to look at those... scores and debate about them, talk about them, talk about how they support the narrative, talk about how they sound, how much we enjoy them.
Yes.
And other factors.
Precisely.
Yeah. And we have new toys. So we're going to get to...
Yeah, we've got a little audio musical
Clips.
Making,
yeah. Did you guys all load clips or was it just me and Shannon?
I loaded two.
A
handful.
Otherwise preoccupied.
Yo, you had a busy day.
So I'm going to roll with everyone else's clips.
I mean...
There's some good selections, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I agree with all of them. I think there may have been something in the finale of The Godfather, but it's fine.
It was, yeah.
We'll cover as much ground as we can.
Yeah, I mean, will we even get to all of the ones in there?
I might just start playing them.
Anyway, so our remaining films are... we've got Schindler's List. The Departed, The Godfather, and Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
I forget we always say the extra title.
Sorry. Who wrote on one of the tracks for Birdman, all of it, LOL?
That was me. Because I wanted to put a clip in it, and then I looked at it and was like, this is... This just goes to the end for how much I like and dislike it. So I just was like, just do all of it.
You're going to have to, we are going to have to comment quite a bit to stay in fair use.
Right. Well, then just do some of it.
Yes. I think we're using all of this quite fairly.
Yeah. I think it's all commentary.
And usefully.
Big fair.
Exactly.
But that being said, do we want to start with any particular, I mean, clips wise, the top one is The Godfather.
Okay.
So we can start with
Sure, why not? Sure.
So you just want me to run in the order of clips and stuff like that?
Yes. I think we should.
Yeah. All right. Presenting The Godfather. Okay, we have to talk yeah. before.
All right.
No. It just breaks. It's just so good.
No, it's so good.
It just hits to my heart.
I can't believe we're really talking over it, guys.
It's hard. We do have to
provide audio.
No, commentary. I think we'll just listen to all the scores.
All the way through.
All the way through.
We'll take a break in the middle of one score.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back.
Yeah, it'll exactly. be yeah. a three and a half hour long podcast.
It's great.
So, I mean, The Godfather waltz
oh
is
my God.
Incredible.
Rich,
there's
lyrical.
A lot. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
It's beautiful.
And it's so gorgeous.
Well, and it starts the entire movie, and to be able to have something that, you know, is so stripped down be that impactful is always, I think, something really elegant because, you know, in my mind, I'm always like, give me the loud music, give me the cymbal crashes. That's how I want to start and end my art. But this does none of those things, and it's, I think, arguably more huge.
Yeah. I think it just gets you into that world like immediately. And they're like, it's not so much in like the story itself, but just like the headspace of like, this is the kind of story that it's going to be. It's going to be soft, beautiful, but also a little bit threatening.
Maybe some blood, a little murder, a couple of trumpets. And now we're at a wedding. No?
Yes. No, I just like this part where like those staccato strings mm-hmm. come in. They just, there's a lot going on in this. I think it's impressive specifically with this song, for any score to become synonymous with a genre as much as it does with the film itself. But this title, I mean, I think it gets used in a lot of places as general, just like dramatic movie music. Mm-hmm. Not even like in other films, but like I think both Universal and Disney Parks like license this music for their Hollywood themed like loop music.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun to talk about.
It does such a good job of like establishing tone, which is exactly kind of the flavor I think that a score should do, like kind of primary motive.
Mm-hmm.
Because it should establish the tone. It should kind of help you ease into the movie. And this, I think, does it. And it kind of is almost reflexive of the movie. Because it's very simple, but also very grand, layered, nuanced, and so it's a dense and very beautiful, like harrowing score for a very dense and beautiful and harrowing movie.
Yeah, for
sure. I agree.
There's tracks like this that I think do a fantastic job of building suspense, and but also yeah. like.
And I think
love this piano here.
Unlike some other scores, just the Godfather soundtrack is just like a beautiful piece just to listen to.
Oh, for
the
sure.
score from start to finish anyway.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was going to say that too. This is the, of the ones that we were listening to, when I listened through all of them, this is the only one that I actually went back and re-listened to or like put on a little bit more of because I was just like,
it's so good.
I actually, when the last track ended and the next one started, I was like, oh, I'm out of the Godfather and score. It's so good.
Yeah. And the way it grows and builds on each other, like, because you have this central kind of, you know, trumpet theme that you get throughout, but it every time you hear it, it adds a little more, and then by the time you get to the finale and you've got the full orchestra playing with it, and it's very grand and epic, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also got this fantastic love theme, and there's just so much going on. I'm trying not to distract too much with the music.
I'm listening to the music, and I'm like,
I know,
oh
this
God,
is
know.
Such a good.
It's yeah, just you just want to get back.
I mean, I think something else that this score does really well is that it travels to every single place that it's supposed to be. So you get, obviously, a lot of that, you know, Italian influence with, like, the tremolo and the picking styles and that old world kind of sound. But then you go right back to America with that, like, upbeat kind of, you know, gumshoe detective sounding piano accompaniment.
Yeah, some jazzy bits here and
there.
Yeah,
the pickup is huge one of those jazzy
very,
bits.
Very 70s, very current for the time. Like, you know, you're still in a period piece, but you're not in the exact same place. And it's like, it's always interesting and it does multiple things very well because it has to.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, listening to all these scores, that's something that is very, very valuable and difficult to do.
Yeah. And you definitely have some pieces that are made very specifically for this film, and even the more novelty pieces are still a lot of fun to listen to, like this one.
I have but one heart.
Oh,
that's so good.
Who doesn't love a good crooner?
Exactly.
A heart?
I could listen to this for a while.
Mm-hmm, I know. Too. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just, you just want to get into it and just get lost in it.
The thing with it, too, I think it's you know, one of those perfect scores is it's like, you listen to it, and when you're watching the movie, you're like, it just adds another layer. You're not, like, taken out of the movie by the music.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's layered into this already fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. But then you listen to it on its own, and you're like, this is, on its own, an incredible achievement.
Yes. Yeah, but I think what's good about this, jumping on that point, is that I think it also, but it rides that line, though, to where it doesn't distract or take mm-hmm. over, but you do notice it.
You notice it because of how good
it
is.
Yeah, you like feel it in the moment, and you're like, oh, nice, and then you're like in the scene, which I think is so hard to do. Like, I think it's so easy to get
buried very fine line
in like a movie, mm-hmm. and then it's so easy to just like take over and just overpower and distract, but it just rides that mm-hmm. so well of being just so like appreciative in the moment while just still.
What? And it does this thing too where it, you know, sometimes scores tell you how to feel, and they're like, this is the emotion you need to feel right now. And it's like, this movie doesn't tell you how to feel, it reinforces what the movie is, like the emotion the movie is telling you.
This is a great example of that.
Yeah.
In another movie, this could be abused to like a point where you're just, you know, oh, this
especially the big, the organ and everything. You know,
it is so much.
Yeah.
What is, you know.
Mm-hmm. I forgot that I was doing this before. It's been so long since recording, but I wanted to shout out Nino Rota, who did the composer for the score.
Mm-hmm.
I know I was like giving those credits earlier, but Nino Rota, good job.
It was nominated for best score, did not win.
It was disqualified.
Was it?
That was for its nomination for love theme. They determined Wikipedia is saying that they determined that Love Theme was a, quote, rewritten version of Nino Rota's music from the 1958 film Fortunella.
Yes, which...
So, a good revision.
Because I went down the rabbit hole on this today. Mm-hmm. So this whole score was disqualified from consideration. Yeah. There was a second vote in which The Godfather still got second place in that vote for... Because Academy members could either... It was disqualified, they appealed. There was a second vote to either replace it and what would replace it, or... if they all voted for The Godfather again, it would just be on the ballot for the official award. It did not win. I think Sleuth beat it, if I remember correctly. But yes, the funny thing is Coppola did ask for some of these pieces to be rewritten versions of, Rota's previous score from, what'd you say?
It's called Fortunella.
It's an Italian film, and that Coppola was a big fan of, and he wanted to give this movie a very Italian feel. It was a big thing he fought with the executives about for this movie. Paramount, I think. It's Paramount. That he fought with them about it to keep this Italian feel. And I think that definitely comes up a lot in Connie's Wedding.
Oh, yeah.
Which we'll just give a little piece of here. I love the applause in this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just straight up taken from...
Yeah.
And this piece, while credited to Nino Rota for the entire score is credited to him, this is actually from Coppola's father, who has an Italian wedding band. And so these are pieces that they would just play at weddings that they... So.
Well, sure, why not? I mean, you know, I would too.
Yeah, that's
cool. So I think they were arranged in a specific order for the film by Rota, but they are just either folk pieces or original compositions from Coppola's father. So,
all right.
Yeah, I love the score.
So you don't have anything else to say?
Let me see.
I was just waiting for when he gets to the baptism clip, because that one was probably like my...
I played that.
Oh, you did play it? Yeah. Oh, I must have been talking over
just
it.
Just a little bit.
Okay. I'm trying to see if there was anything.
That
I can play the baptism again. Would you like me to play the baptism again?
That's up to you. I was just going to talk a little about it, where I just love how it's very beautiful, but it's just so menacing, just because, you know, like in the scenes, like what's happening and what they're cross-cutting towards. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just... It's so good. Like, it just adds, it's like one of the part where it kind of feeds into, like, it's like that appreciation mm-hmm. with tension that yeah. it kind of gives off. I just love it so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just those organ, like.
Yeah.
It's got such a menacing sound. I know that a lot of current, like, contemporary films are doing this too. I'm thinking of The Favorite, with how organ is used as this, like, weaponizing thing, mm-hmm. and, like, can't help but, you know, notice that The Godfather is one of, I think, the most primary genealogies of that. I don't know if it's the first to do that with organ, but it's definitely one of the most memorable.
There's a couple bits in The Grand Budapest Hotel that utilize organ mm-hmm. really well as well.
It's just an interesting instrument.
Shannon, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay, aside from the obvious, but we don't have a tentacled character playing it. That's, you know.
But that's a good use of organ.
Also another great use of organ that can be drawn back here.
Exactly. How often do you get a tentacled bearded character playing the organ?
Yeah, I'm trying to see, because I'm having to flip between Pirates my notes and our clip.
Pirates is beyond contemporary, though, Carter. It is, it is eternal. Pirates, eternal, not contemporary, can't be confined to one moment.
I think it's relatively contemporary.
I mean, I suppose.
But yeah, it does use the love theme and the waltz quite a bit, but not as much as maybe some other films that are on this episode today, like, that use their main themes
I don't,
as much.
Yeah, I don't know that any of these movies, like, overuse their main theme.
Or at least if they are using it multiple times, they're doing it in interesting
and new ways.
It's doing
it differently. Yeah, I don't think
it's not a Halloween situation.
Yeah, I don't think any of these are Halloween or what you guys said about Pirates of the Caribbean that I still do not agree with.
You can not agree that it makes it bad. You do have to admit it does use that theme quite a bit.
I don't think they overuse it. They have like four or five different themes in Pirates of the Caribbean, but we don't need to rehash this issue.
You know.
Yeah. Shannon's on my side.
Shannon was not there that season.
Shannon's on my side. No, if she was there, it would not have lost.
It would likely have ended differently, yes. But alas. Alas. But I mean, I do think there's enough variation in The Godfather that even if it is putting its main theme to work, it's at least doing it in, you know, plenty of variation, plenty of interesting takes. So yeah, I don't think I have anything in my mind that was like, ooh, The Godfather, you're getting points taken off there.
No, I think, and like I said, especially compared to some of our other movies that use their themes quite a bit, even in past seasons and whatnot, like it uses its themes, but it uses them sparingly. And like you said, it does build on them.
Yeah. As long as they build, because I mean, a lot of movies, the composer only writes one or two themes.
Right.
And so they use those themes, you know, relatively frequently, and it's just about how are they presenting them.
Right. This is most films are not scored the way that Star Wars movies are.
Yeah.
In which, like, they watch the whole movie.
Star Wars itself was kind of a new, you know, like a revival of this, like, you know, bringing in leitmotifs and different themes for everything, and that was not the norm by any stretch of the means for a long time.
You had an adventure if it was an action movie, you had an adventure theme or something.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that The Godfather, even though it has its handful of motifs, does do a very good job with all of. Like, I'm not trying to take points off. Like, I think it is just worth noting that it's apparent where it's using the waltz, and also some of it is in how, you know, Paramount packages the score as a soundtrack itself.
That's true. There's, I mean, with anything like this, there's more music than we're listening to on an album.
Yeah. And it's also like, it's split up and used in different spots for different purposes.
And in some cases, out of order, depending on...
Yeah, well, I think this might be out of order, because The Godfather Waltz is several tracks down, and the main title is up at the top. And
I mean, the main title would be at the beginning, but...
But I think that is kind of a mishmash between the actual Godfather Waltz track and the finale track.
Relatively... Well, it's the main titles.
The waltz is, or Connie's Wedding is a little bit further down.
It's a little bit further down. Not as bad as like John Williams, but and we'll talk to him when we talk to him. But he has a specific reason why his albums are always out of order.
Yeah.
Which, anyone have anything else to say about The Godfather?
Not specifically about The Godfather, but The Godfather Part 2, I believe, Nino Rota did win best score for. So any injustices, I suppose, that might have been felt were hopefully made up for.
I started thinking about this because I was looking at what was nominated or what won Best Original Score, and this is an award where I think the Academy doesn't necessarily always get it right.
Well, what won that year?
What won that year? I can't remember. What.
Oh, in part two? But, oh, it was nominated.
What won the year that Godfather?
We can find out, but keep talking. But
I just think there are some things that I think, A, when you sit down and listen to them as a whole, I think you can tell that some stuff that wasn't even nominated has its merits and has stuff. Whereas I think sometimes something that's maybe even generic in the composer's full, would you call it a discography in this case?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
May not even stand out compared to some of their other scores.
Well, and music, I mean, is arguably even more subjective than movies.
Yeah.
And so to try and, you know, people are all going to have very strong and differing opinions because, you know, music's even more specialized. So it's going to hit, different scores are going to hit people differently. I mean, look at this year, like, obviously Little Women had the best score out of any of those movies. Mm-hmm. But Joker won, and it's fine.
Joker's score is pretty good.
Joker's score is good.
Joker's score is maybe the best part of Joker.
I was going to say, I don't know if I would even say, I mean, I might put it over the Little Women's score.
The Little Women's score is clearly the best.
Anyway, so what ended up winning that year was Limelight, which is a Charlie Chaplin film, one of his later films.
The first film that Pauline Kael ever reviewed.
Hey, everything comes back.
I know.
Everything comes back. Yeah, but that's what ended up winning that year.
I think we do have two films up here that I think have... I think all four of these scores are actually very, very good.
Yeah.
But we have two that didn't get nominated at all.
Yeah.
One was contested, but it wasn't even on the short list. It was on the long list, and we can talk about that when we get to that film. But
anyway, The Godfather. There it is.
Godfather there, then got disqualified. So
what's our next film?
What is our next film, Carter?
Okay, but this isn't even on...
It should be, and I have an argument why. I have an argument why it should be.
It bothers me that it wasn't on the album.
So there's two albums for this movie.
Yeah.
One is a... We have to get this through, a little bit of this. But there is... It was a weird, you know, mid-2000s. We release a soundtrack that has the songs we chose for it.
And then the score.
Yeah. But this song, was released...
There's a lot of it without words.
Yes. This song was released before the movie came out. So it is.
It came out before Schindler's List?
I hate you.
That was pretty good, Phoenix.
It came, so it came out before.
I loved when the Nazis all sang Shipping Up to Boston.
Shipping Up to Boston.
When Schindler's.
It was just so harrowing.
Yeah. Climbing up the factory! I lost my leg! A couple of fun points about that song. Released a year before The Departed. No one knew it. Scorsese heard it once and was like, put that in the movie.
When you know, you know.
Also, he basically made that song.
Yes, made that song. It's their only charting single.
Yeah.
Released on two albums because of this. I think, I'm not saying it's going to change my ranking, but it should be in consideration. It is worth talking about.
The song, Shipping Up to Boston?
Yes.
I mean, sure. It's a good song.
Yeah, I mean, it's relatively. I feel like it's always
Boston, fine town.
Hard to.
I love Boston.
It's hard to separate with Scorsese movies, the score and the soundtrack, because he uses them. His soundtrack is always so prolific, and then his score is always like right nearby. Mm-hmm. They work in tandem at times, or at times like when you know there you'd expect a score, you get it's like something from the soundtrack, or something you'd expect from the soundtrack, you get a score. That they almost feel like mixed together, so it's hard to it's hard to separate the two. But I think I would not include this in the score.
It's fine. I just wanted to play it.
I appreciate you playing it because I also was sad that it wasn't on the score.
Yeah, sets a good tone.
And it's fine because we'll talk about another film where I didn't include some stuff that was written before.
There is plenty of good stuff in this score, though.
Yes.
Yes.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the score. A lot.
Actually, pleasantly surprised.
Prefacing, I liked all four of these scores a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say earlier, this was probably the hardest score ranking I've ever done for Film Brackets. Yeah. Like, this was really tough.
What was I saying? So, yes. So, I like this score a lot. I mean, there's a lot of really fun stuff going on.
I was
going
to say, all the Spanish guitar is...
Yes. Very, very good.
Fantastic.
This score does use this tango theme.
Yeah.
pretty heavily.
Yes.
But the thing that I like about it is that each time it's used, there's either some difference in how it's played or in the effects and the tremolo and the differences in like what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
They're plugging it through several amps at one point and giving it some crazy sounds.
It's gone through some different stuff.
Yeah. So I like that. And that you can use that tango, which, I mean, I think the title of the track, Cops Are Criminals, really sound, you know, really sums up like the, you know, what this tango does. And it's this dance between the two organizations and how they have to work together to survive, but also they're working against each other. It's, I mean, there's a lot of like subtext there, but it does work the same way that, I mean, I think of other tangos from films, and it does serve a similar purpose without having a scent of a woman type scene or something, you know. Yeah, I've got a lot of stuff that I pulled for this one.
There's, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of, and Phoenix, you were talking earlier about like why the tango's in there, right?
Yeah, so I actually looked it up, and Scorsese was talking with the composer, which I'm bringing up his name right now. I was
trying Howard Shore.
Howard Shore.
Same.
G.E. Smith did a lot of the Spanish guitar for this.
So Martin Scorsese specifically requested that it have like a tango score because he liked how it was kind of metaphoric and how it worked with like the movie, and that they kind of have this like dance of death between each other, and how they, the two of them kind of dance around the law, and like they are like, and they're, it's like this game that they have. So he felt like it would kind of set the tone and also was sort of metaphorical to like the story itself, which I think is pretty cool. Like, I think it's an interesting take on this because I don't, this movie is not something I think you go into expecting like a tango score, because it's just such like an action film like idea. But
yeah,
I think it works like successfully. I think it definitely gives off the vibe that he's going for, and it's just a really wonderful piece of music.
Yeah. The other thing I really like about this is there's a lot of really fun builds and suspense, and like they build suspense and they build intensity that have some really fun like moments where that actually lets go, stuff like that. Trying to remember what tracks. I think it might be one of these. It's this or The Faithful Departed that has a very good shift in tone. No, it's the next one. Okay, so it's the Faithful Departed. I also like this where it just gets some, a little bit of light shredding and
this delay. To me, I mean, this track I think is a little kind of generic action movie.
In very the middle of a very generic action movie period. I think it works
very
for
kind of mid 2000s like. It kind of blends together with a lot of the music you were hearing in movies around the same time. I think the tango theme in particular stands out. But yeah, I think there's quite a bit of music in this score that's like there's some really great stuff with the guitar and things like that, but everything else I think is very kind of run of the mill.
Nope, not next track, sorry. I'm having a hard time finding out which track is which, but it's okay. This should be the right one.
As I say, all of it done to a very, I mean, high level. All still good.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, yeah, there's the track that I like the most, and this is one of them, but I like the track Chinatown a lot.
Yeah.
And I've got three different clips from that to like break down. There's kind of three movements to it. This one builds, that's the change right there.
Yeah. I'll say every track that has the guitar in it, I think is spectacular.
It is. I'll go ahead and go to Chinatown and talk about that because I think it's probably the best song. So I like this little part.
Mm-hmm.
This is clearly just like it's got a fun kind of cop chase feel to it. It also, I think this one has the most nods to the source material for this film in general, that it does fit with a lot of like the Asian action films that were coming out at the time, especially the ones that Infernal Affairs is the name of it.
This one
inspired this one.
Which I didn't realize Scorsese didn't watch until after he already made the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty surprised.
That's very surprising to me. That's extremely surprising to me. He's a very well-watched individual as well. Maybe it was just too like current and it had slipped under his radar.
When Hollywood gave it to him, he didn't know that it was an adaptation. And then when he found out, he didn't watch it until the movie came out, and then he was like, okay, I'll look into it.
I was gonna say, like this right here is very kind of generic tension building.
I do like that drum in the background. It's kind of, but I like what happens later because this has kind of three distinct movements to it. which is that about here. So you get some downbeat stuff, and then it keeps building again, and I like these much louder, reverb-heavy drums that are building with it. That actually, thinking about it, giving me some like Akira vibes almost. Like with the, it's not as some of the bigger action tracks in Akira have those big drums that.
Kind of. This is it's almost kind of Hans Zimmer-esque.
A little bit too, yeah.
He has a lot of loud percussive.
It's true.
The rhythm. He's always got the. This is the the classic ticking clock. Bag.
But it still sounds very like industrial. Like I know where we are. I can visualize where we are based off of those, off of that use of audio texture. It's great. It's really great. Initially, when I was coming in to listen to the score, I was like vibing with the first three songs, and then I thought it got too repetitive with like repeating the tango. But then I kind of came back from it. I was like, well, I mean, I can't fault it for doing something really well, and the more I listened to it, I was kind of like, okay, there's some nuance here, and I think what works to the Departed's benefit as well is just the fact that it does a lot in short spaces, like the like Chinatown. You're doing three different movements that are kind of distinct in their own different way, but you're finding a way to like blend all of that together in a way that makes sense. I think a lot of the other scores that we've listened to, like they'll take one idea and spread it out over one song instead of like shoving it together in miniature. Yeah.
This is another song with two very distinct movements here, Last Rites. I think that is what happens when you get very talented musicians involved in the writing process as well, like G.E. Smith on the guitar.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And Sharon has been composing a lot of these individual orchestra parts. And that's what, I think you can bring in, the London Symphony Orchestra and it can sound beautiful, but if you have some very talented musicians in on the writing process, etc.
Pocket of them, that's all you need.
When you get a very talented Spanish guitar player, you get some variations on those themes. You get stuff that you wouldn't even think of because you would say, oh, this is where we want that tango again. We just want the tango again. And they're like, oh, well, this scene's a little bit, it's
Let's
a little more
different.
It's a little more crooked, or it's a little more intense. Let's do it this way. Let's
and
do it that way.
Again, going back to Scorsese, then it's like maybe we just want a pop song in there, or maybe we want like a
And that's the other thing too is whenever we do this, where we listen to the score but not the soundtrack. The soundtrack is part of the musical identity of the movie. And so
For sure.
When you're listening to just the score and there is a prominent soundtrack, you are kind of cutting out a significant part of the music of the movie.
Yes.
And with Scorsese in particular, it is like a substantial amount.
It's like with Back to the Future, like
the Power of Love.
Power of Love. Yeah, Power of Love.
Back in Time.
Back in Time are crucial to that movie.
Johnny Be Good.
Johnny Be Good. And there's a lot of sound and like Mr. Sandman.
I was going to say, actually, if I think about it, the most crucial song to any scene is anytime I hear... Bum, bum, bum. I hear the.
Yeah, there's
I just
a lot.
Can feel
and
the pan.
I was gonna say because even Back to the Future, you don't even get like orchestral score until like 20 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
And so it's there's some movies where it's like the soundtrack.
The
is
first
just,
15 minutes might just be Power of Love.
Yeah, it's Power of Love.
Well,
and
there's
then
ticking clocks.
Ticking
beginning.
Clocks at the beginning, and then Power of Love, and then there's not score until like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
In. But yeah, it's some
giving
movies,
Back to the Future the score episode deserved real quick.
Some movies have such a prominent soundtrack that it's important to acknowledge that, even though we didn't listen to it.
Yeah, God forbid we ever do a Guardians movie.
Guardians score is good. Actually,
Guardians score is good.
I like the Guardians score compared to some other Marvel scores.
That's very true.
I can at least hum the theme of those movies.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. Well, that's two movies under our belt.
Yeah.
And I think it's time to take a quick break.
Quick break.
Yeah. All right.
Phoenix has to artificially inseminate some cows.
BRB.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 52.8 Media Network called Tap Heads. That's right. Tap Heads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had.
We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads and go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action.
This is not live.
We're back. Hey, we're back. Music, hello. Movies, television.
Television?
Actually, none of this is television. I mean, I just think it's time for us, you know, you guys just get ready. Just
so now we're talking about. Oh. There we go. Oh.
He said the cue.
Is there a bird? Is there a bird in here?
Is there a man?
A man? Is there a bird man?
I do love the beginning of this track with just a little bit of, like, I mean, I'm sure it's fully staged, like, talking, but I am a fan of that, of just people being like, oh, we're going to go? We're going to, okay, start it. Even in, like, rap songs where they're like, turn it up in my headset, and you're like, yeah. Oh, this is so staged, but I love it. I love the idea that you're people, too.
Or, like, when you hear the start and they're like, press play.
Yep.
And think of rock song.
Turn it up.
So, Birdman.
Birdman.
Score by.
Or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
Antonio Sanchez.
Antonio Sanchez. Drummer.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. I know what you're thinking. Shocking.
He can play drums.
Now, there's an interesting thing on this score. There's quite a bit of classical music, especially on the back end.
Yes.
At least of the actual CD or the CD, Jesus.
Okay, Boomer.
The compact disc.
I don't think Boomer's.
No, they didn't.
On this LP.
This record.
Yeah, there.
This 8-track.
So at the end of this, there are some classical tracks. The amount of classical music in this score, or used in this movie, is why it was disqualified from consideration for. Even from the long list of, it was appealed, and the Academy really just decided that they couldn't have it. So similar to A Shipping Off to Boston.
I like the drum breaks, though.
They're fine. There's a lot of them. I don't know what else. I have notes that I wrote down, but I also have to look at the timing and stuff. So yeah, I said I excluded all the classical pieces from my consideration, but I did think that those pieces were chosen very well. My next note was just stream of consciousness as I was listening was, I like jazz drums, but do I like jazz drums this much?
It's a choice that you have to stick with.
To me,
that's for sure.
Yeah, to me, it's very like, once again, this is kind of the score reflecting the movie. It's very chaotic. It's very like, I got the most anxious listening.
Anxious listening
to the drums.
For sure.
And so you get like this anxiety. Feels very stream of consciousness, which is very much how the movie is structured. There are abrupt starts and stops.
I feel like very unstable, very like twitchy almost when I'm listening to this score.
I was walking through Barnes & Noble's when I was listening to this, and I swear I couldn't even like read the like book titles because I was just, like, the music was just going on. I was just like, wait, what did I just, what? And I was just like trying to like focus and I couldn't. And I'm just like, it was really affecting.
Yeah.
On the opposite end for me, while I was listening to this and trying to write down some notes when interesting stuff came up, but also like keeping track of work emails and other stuff, I would really lose where I was and how many tracks deep I was into it, and it would sometimes fade into the background. I think this score is at its best when it hits these grooves like this, and like the two strut tracks are very good about that.
It's certainly, if you don't like jazz drum, you're not gonna like it. It also does a good job of like being very unique and interesting to listen to on its own, but not when you're like, when you're watching the movie, you're not like taken out by the drums. Like they feel very,
other than like the one shot of the drummer.
They feel very integrated into the movie. And so it's like you kind of it adds to your anxiety, like the music's eliciting an emotion that goes with the movie.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're not like sitting there being like, can they turn the drums down now? Like
no, it yeah, it does. It all feels like one seamless part of the fabric of this movie.
And in terms of the classical music, I considered it insofar as like its use and placement, not in the actual like composition of the music. Because like I can't be like, oh, you know, this was so well composed for this movie because it was a classic composition made by
but like it was curated for the movie.
Yeah. So okay. if it's curated and it's used in as for a specific purpose at a specific point to elicit a specific emotion or to support a specific point, it's not any different than someone using a pop song.
Yeah, but then I think that you can't consider it if you're not considering the soundtrack to The Departed. Then
I mean, yeah, it's
I that, mean, and that's why I removed it from consideration because I'm not gonna consider shipping up to Boston as a song from The Departed, so I'm not going to consider Symphony Number 9, you know.
Yeah, I just, to me, it's like, it's part of the musical identity, so it's...
Well, so are the pop songs to the musical identity of The Departed. I feel like you have to treat it equally, then.
I'm with Robbie. Yeah. I also didn't look at the scores that were like the...
I skipped some, those songs.
Yeah, the symphonic songs, because I was like, this is not Antonio Sanchez who wrote it.
Good music.
I mean, when I listen to the score on it, I've listened to the score before. It's good music.
Yeah, don't sleep on the orchestral stuff. But not saying.
I'm just saying when you're talking about it in a competitive podcast like this, you have to. These were composed before and not for this film.
Yeah, that's for sure. The only thing that I get hung up on is the vocal element for me. I'm just like. I don't know if it's because automatically in my mind, I'm like, okay, you know, a symphonic performance is something that's going to be closer to an actual like scored composition, whereas something that has the vocal element in it is like farther separated because it's something that could be performed live. But well, I mean, not that you couldn't perform like a symphonic piece live, but that's what I get hung up on. Like if there's, and I'm trying to find my threads of discussion here, but I think largely I err on the side of, treat them equal, but maybe not so much just because of the sung element. That takes me out of it enough to be like, this has an identity apart from the movie because it's got an identity with like the band or the singer or whatever brand they have.
I mean, there's vocal elements to certain tracks on Schindler's List.
And The Godfather.
That's true. Yeah, if they grow, I mean, it just depends on the stature of like, I don't know if Itzhak Perlman is the rocker that, you know, this icon, I guess, that the on the same level as who's the band who
Dropkick Murphys, not Dropkick really Murphys. Icons, but
I mean, they're artists. They're out there doing their
thing. Sure. Icon Huey Lewis and the News.
DKM is
big the DKM best. Stand.
Yeah.
I'm a flogging Molly guy when it comes to gimmicky Irish Celtic.
What are their followers called?
We've got a fight outside.
they're just also Murphys.
Are they the drop kicked?
The drop kicked Murphys.
The dropped kicked.
One of the kicked.
They were dropped and then kicked.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, what I'm saying is it wasn't like a significant weight in my consideration. It was just the kind of thing of like. Noting like the emotions and things elicited from the classical pieces and then how those relate to the movie. But it wasn't like, I was like counting it any differently from, like this, a soundtrack or anything like that.
I mean,
I can't stop you. If I take it out, it doesn't affect my ranking regardless.
Okay. I mean, I think this is more discussion than I would even like to have on the classical pieces that are plucked from, this would be an extreme, and I don't feel this strongly about it, but it's like, if I made a movie and just plucked a bunch of Beethoven and said, this is my score, consider it. Like, you could be like, oh, it's very nice, but it's not, Beethoven didn't write you a score for your movie, you know?
And that's why we'll never do Amadeus.
Because it will lose in best score.
That, for sure.
Which, I also feel similar to Robbie. Like, I just think that if it's...
I don't even know what we would
if
do
if it was selected...
Because it's about Mozart. Then,
so the music has to be in there.
So music has to be Mozart, but also Mozart, you can't say, expressly wrote it for the film. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's a fun...
I don't think we're doing it anytime soon.
Yeah, no.
I agree. Like, if it's not, if it wasn't written for the movie, then you shouldn't do the score. Like, scores in general are always written for the movie. So these, like, symphonic orchestras were not written for Birdman. They were just selected by existing material, like soundtracks are. That's what the whole point of them are. They're selecting pre-existing, like, content or pre-existing music for the movie. So it would be part of the soundtrack, or it would, at least for this clarification of these rules, we'd have to consider it as such.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like I said, it doesn't affect my ranking either way.
Yeah, I know.
That's fine. Yeah. But
anyways.
Yeah. Phoenix told me to play all of this song.
Yeah, so. Doors of Distance. Oh, I loved this one. I just love how, like, the groove you get in with it and how, like, the...
Can we play the whole song?
The space it gets
back and forth. If we talk through the whole thing, I may, like, put it down.
Yeah. This was one that I was like, I would actually, like, jam this in general. Like, I just think it's so, like, it's just so fun. It starts off really slow and then it gets really loud, but, like, distant and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the groove is really nice. It doesn't feel... It gets chaotic, but it doesn't ever feel like how certain songs... Like, I think it's like Internal War where it gets like really chaotic.
Yeah, it never loses control the same way that some of those later...
Yeah, it still keeps a groove.
Yeah.
And then the groove kind of builds, but it never gets too like insane and like just not even something you can even like bop to or whatever. Just something, some loud noise. That I really enjoy with it. I really like the score in this movie a lot, and I maybe am like probably I wouldn't say biased, but I guess I probably appreciate it more than a lot of other people because I find a lot of the songs in this to be really really something I would like listen to on just in my daily life, and then this is one especially where I could just see myself just getting lost in it and just kind of like moving around towards it. It's really good. I really like jazz drumming. As evident in this movie.
It's excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See, it's like building up now, too. Just, it's so good.
Yeah. My big question, maybe, you mean, you guys are open to convince me, but I just kept having the thought that I didn't feel like if you took out this score specifically that you necessarily, and were to replace it with a generic score that still fit the movie... I don't feel like this has to be jazz drums or any, this specific choice has to be made for any particular.
I think it's crucial.
Wildly disagree.
I think it's absolutely crucial to the movie.
Yeah. I think the
okay, we give me, sorry.
Yeah, no, I think the, like, just the, like, beating of the drum and, like, the percussion itself is what kind of gets you into, like, Regan Thomas's, or is it Thompson? Thompson's, like, Thompson, mind. Yeah. Like, it's like, everything's just kind of like hitting off the wall and stuff like that, and like the beating of the drums in particular, and like the constant movement and chaos in that is like kind of wrapping his brain. Like, it just feels like hammers and like nails in his head. And stuff.
Percussion as an instrument is like inherently chaotic.
Yeah.
And so to add that into like this movie to reflect his own like subconscious, it's also the way they do it with just the drum. It's very minimalist, and the movie is very minimalist. And so I think like stylistically, it's reflexive of it. There's elements of like, I think you get, you know, tone is reflected in it with this kind of, you know, this kind of frenetic anxiety kind of thing going on. There's a lot. I think it's unique to the movie. I think if you had an orchestral score, or even just like a basic instrumental score, it would not be as effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, cause like the second you start adding tone to this, like the effect that you achieve with just, you know, straight beats, in this collage that we're listening to, like all of that is lost cause it's, you know, you have to consider something else like that pitched environment. I'm not even sure what kind of, I mean, maybe like, I don't know. Could you replicate this rhythmically with a zither and still get the same effect? I don't really
like
know.
Strings or something.
I mean, maybe just like pizzicato plucked strings, but even that's one of the most percussive uses.
Yeah,
of
I was gonna
have
like
And
that's even going back.
And
to
I think
jazz.
Like without with, this is getting more into like pretense and stuff, but I think the added like element of it just being like a lone musician kind of adds to his like psyche as well, of just being like squared off from the world and kind of like nothing else is like distracting. It's just this like beating in his head.
It's like singularly his mind, and then
So it's got that like lonesomeness that he carries along with the anxiety and chaos that he carries in the movie. So I just think it's like really brilliantly like reflecting of the movie itself.
Yeah. And I think, if you don't have it in there, or if you swap it for something else, you don't quite achieve the same effect, and you're already kind of losing a little bit of what makes that identity a friggin' so crazy and awesome to watch. And
this was truly a thought I had, because the moments I thought were more captivating were some of these with even just a little bit of light, like synthesizers or strings or something that I found this to be more captivating. These were moments where my ears perked up, and which is what they're effectively used for in the film.
I was going to say, because you're used to hearing the drum up to that point,
the calm
sounds different.
Yeah.
The kind of tranquil tones and stuff.
It's black and white, adding a little bit of that color selectively. So.
And I mean, Carter, you're 100% right. If you don't love jazz drums, this can kind of get boring or wear on you. And I'm just not as big of a jazz guy as any of my friends who have played in like high school bands and stuff. Like I'm musical, but from a different kind of background there, with, you know, guitar and I mean even drums, like, but much more of a rock or a country like side of that.
So when Jerry Seinfeld as a B said you like jazz, you responded no.
I don't dislike jazz. I just
he stared him in the face and said no.
I don't like jazz, there, Mr. Seinfeld.
Mr. B.
I do like all of the chaotic elements coming together in jazz. I don't know if I ever really like it when it's just like, oh, here's one singular, like, even if it's like, here's one singular jazz piano without any bass or drums or, you know. I like having those elements come together, but I don't know if I like looking at it like a puzzle that has been put together. I don't like looking at one singular puzzle piece.
Solo experimental music. Fair enough. Not for Robbie. Yeah. You heard it.
I love layers.
Right here.
I mean,
layers.
You can listen to like anything that I've written myself. Layers. I love layers. Like it's.
Yeah.
I'm not a big minimalist when it comes to music.
Yeah. Music to you is like an onion.
Yes. Or a cake.
Or a cake. It's got layers.
Or the earth.
Or the earth.
The earth is. Air. I saw something the other day that was saying the earth was a ravioli
Photoshop?
Because it's a molten center with a hard shell.
Oh my God.
Just like I think that the earth is a molten chocolate cake.
Just like a really affected
waiting to be
Photoshop object with a bunch of layers.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, anyone have anything else to say about Birdman or the Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance?
Where's Birdwoman?
That's coming up after Toni Collette finishes her horse movie coming up.
I'll take a moment of silence for Horsewoman.
I guess I just want to ask how you guys feel about it in like a listening sense. Like,
I love it.
You would just listen to it generally?
Just like, drumming and just
surprised, but I do love it. Normally, I don't listen to a lot of solo percussion. I normally kind of err on the side of Robbie as far as like, you know, with percussion, I kind of like
it, music's
in
onion
a layer.
You.
Exactly. Yeah. But this worked for me. For whatever reason, it just, I mean, and it, I think it's a testament to the performance itself. Like if you didn't have somebody at the top of their game, soloing on this, then, you know, the entire charade is up. Then it's just sounding like, you know, random person banging on the pots and pans that they've got in their kitchen.
And in the interest of transparency, Phoenix, you are a percussionist.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for acknowledging past.
I think it needs to be said.
Yes. I am a percussionist.
Phoenix is a percussionist, and let me do the music for his, for his web series using MIDI drums.
Yeah,
and he never got mad at me about it.
Yeah, which I thought was so funny after the fact. I was like, this wouldn't have been hard for me to do, but you know, I wanted Robbie to do it. And it's probably why I had like a percussionist theme like that I wanted to do, because I like respond so much to them. You'll also maybe remember back in season one that I gave, I think maybe RoboCop the best score, because I was like, it has a Glockenspiel. And because it has a Glockenspiel,
like auxiliary percussion.
It is
big fan.
A good score. And that is just
Glockenspiel is good.
That's just a fact of cinema. If your score has a Glockenspiel, it is a good score. This sadly doesn't. It probably could use more, but but that's why I respond to a lot of drums. So I really enjoy this.
Yes,
this score.
More cowbell, more Glockenspiel.
All right.
More electric
saw. So
we
only have one score left.
Rock the Glock.
I'll start with my first note on this one.
The only one that won an Oscar.
Yes. I will start with my first
note. John Williams, as per standard with Steven Spielberg.
Jay Wills.
My first two notes were sad violin. Lots of sad violin.
Yes.
We are, yes.
This score, when I listen to it on its own, itself almost moves me to tears.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful.
It's Zach Perlman.
It's sad.
Rich. Thick. This is a cake.
The man is...
in one instrument.
A hell of a violinist.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He loves his vibrato.
Sorrowful.
Absolutely loves his
gorgeous.
Vibrato.
Beautiful. But...
oh my god. Even just hearing this again on the switchboard.
This score is... heavy.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not unlike the rest of the movie.
Believe it or not.
Which...
no Dropkick Murphys.
Here's what I think the most... here's the most impressive thing, I think, is that... like, Schindler's List... because the movie is so depressing... the music isn't, like, over the top. It's, like, appropriately depressing for an already extremely depressing movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's appropriate how this one starts, like...
how dare you?
It's the remix version.
This is the trap remix. I am mortified by what's going on.
It's me. Some chaotic energy.
Hi,
Brett. Here.
Yeah. oh my. That was.
Oh, do you guys hate me yet?
That was an offense on the ears.
I think that affected my rankings.
I'm voting off Robbie this week.
Don't do it.
All the movies will stay, but Robbie has to go.
Yeah. First. Final four in the last episode, but with only three hosts.
With only three hosts.
Yeah.
My recommendation this week is never doing that again.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
I had to do something to not cry during these songs.
That's fair.
It's so haunting and beautiful.
You had a point earlier that you wanted to bring up about the order of the tracks in this mm-hmm. song and like yes. how John Williams...
So, John Williams, you might notice this in his Star Wars scores. You might notice this in any of his scores. I think he does in all of them. But the tracks are wildly out of order from when they appear in the movie. And it's because John Williams, being the expert musician that he is and composer.
Oh, hold on. I just wanted to love the pan flute on this.
Oh, yes. And this is another movie. This is another movie that has, you know, one very like singular theme, but they change it,
yeah.
they grow it, they move it, they yeah. do, you know, transform it.
It stays fresh.
Exactly. Yeah. It never feels like it's overstaying its welcome. But yeah, John Williams, being the talented, you know, composer and musician that he is, he puts his albums in order that it would like best be listened to as a musical album. So whereas most movie scores will just put their music in order of beginning to end when it appears in the movie, he purposefully orders...
or just order it as in the book and how it yeah. was written.
But he purposely orders his scores to be like a musical experience. Like as though you were to sit down and listen to the album beginning to end, he wants you to have a balanced... an enjoyable listening experience. So thank you, John Williams, for considering us the listener.
Reading Rainbow.
Yeah. But, oh God. I also...
Remembrances is a fantastic yeah, track.
This is yeah. this is a particular thing, also the Making the List.
Yes.
Also a great one.
I don't have a clip from that because I couldn't decide what to play there and I wasn't going to yeah. go a Phoenix route and
oh
say,
God.
All of it? LOL?
Listen.
The thing that's
it worked.
Yeah.
You played all of it.
I think it's like a 9-minute track. You know?
I think
it's one of the like...
It's interesting too because John Williams has a very, very unique style.
It's and like, I do like those more John yeah, Williams-y
you,
moments.
I was
going to
say,
score.
You hear a John Williams score and like, that's a John Williams score. Like, I can... pick that out of a lineup. But this score is different. It's kind of not his usual stuff, and you notice when he has little John Williams flourishes.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, that's, you know, that's his, you know, big melodic moment. It's very kind of, or the horns will come up. He loves, yeah, John Williams
or
loves
get
horns.
A big swell or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, you'll get a big swell, and you're like, oh, there's the John Williams moment. But a lot of this movie is, like, out of the ordinary for him, which I really liked that he was able to kind of change his style a little bit.
Their workforce is a good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I what I really liked about this one is I found this one to be one of the less depressing ones which works with the scene because it's like the workshop is supposed to be sort of a haven. Mm-hmm. So I like that while you get the industrial kind of melody from it and still kind of like an overall sadness, it still has a little bit of brightness because of the situation that it's on. It really supports the narrative.
Yeah.
This moment here in the track would not feel out of place if Harry, Ron, and Hermione were walking around Hogwarts.
Yeah, this is a pretty John Williams-y with the flute, and
I definitely was getting. I mean, I was just in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, so you catch a lot of it just walking around, hearing that loop there, and this definitely just like even in that moment, I was like, oh, this is very John Williams because it definitely brought me back to that headspace too, of like walking around Hogsmeade.
Yeah,
but yeah.
And I think once again, establishing tone.
The score.
That's the score. It does it to a T.
The check mark. That was the first check.
Score is reflexive of the film. It's not jarring. I think the score itself, like the same way the movie makes you sit and watch everything, it doesn't cut away. The score too is very kind of it. You sit in the music. It's slower. You kind of live with it, and this the notes are stretched out, and it's that too is reflected in the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am a fan. There's a vocal track on this one that I think is a
exquisite.
This is fantastic.
Yeah,
really beautiful.
And I don't know what the origins, Jerusalem of Gold translates to.
Classic song, I think.
Yeah, Jerusalem of Gold is what Jerusalem shall shave us. Zahav? I don't speak Hebrew at all, so forgive me. But it's a very good track. I do think that this is where you can have a vocal track or something that's classically written beforehand.
But recorded, at least.
Recorded for this.
Arranged.
This.
For vocals, yeah.
Even just with, like, the mixing of, like, doing this very echoey chamber feel to it.
Yeah. I mean, this is, it's certainly, this is a different case.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
And, like, this, the Ramat Gan Chamber Choir is chosen for a reason. And I'm sorry if I keep butchering my Hebrew, not Jewish, contrary to popular belief.
That's is that the popular belief?
No, I get Mexican more.
Yeah, I can see it.
Thanks.
And it's DeShazer.
Yeah, it ends with an R. I don't know if that... It's very French is what it is.
Yeah.
DeShazer.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Roberto.
Yeah. Anybody have any more...
I had just a fun fact about the score.
In the Holocaust.
This fact is fun. So,
hey guys, just remember, the Holocaust happened.
Yeah.
Anyways.
It unfortunately did. Why did you...
I was giving Carter a fact. He was spitting facts.
That's true.
Say it louder for the people in the back.
We can't forget.
This is another fact. Now it's. I feel like it's been built up now. I'll be honest, it's not a fact. I was going to make a joke.
What is it?
I was just going to say, you know the track, I Could Have Done More? That originally wasn't the full title. It originally was, I Could Have Done More Glockenspiel. John Williams was just being self-aware that he could have used more Glockenspiel in this score.
This is me looking at the camera.
Tried Phoenix, but sadly.
It's like the name of that... H. John Benjamin jazz piano album.
I should have learned to play piano.
Yeah, I really should have or whatever.
Yeah.
We all should learn to play piano. If you don't know, learn.
Or learn the Glock.
Yeah. Oh, I should
both
have
is what? Learned better to play than, piano.
Yeah. You know, lots of people learn the Glock.
Which Glock are you referring to?
Hey guys, it's me, Brett.
That clock. Hey, Brett knows all about it.
Yeah, he knows a lot about the clock.
Anyway.
Yeah, I think it's time to rank.
Time for our rankings?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I know mine by
Let's
heart.
Let's go.
Oh, it's only four movies.
It's only four.
Yes, but
but the tradition of getting my phone and looking.
I already mentioned it when we were talking about it. Godfather is a perfect score for a near perfect movie, so it was my number one.
Okay. I was gonna just reiterate that this was really hard for me for this top four for like in general.
Yeah, number one was the easiest for me.
Same. Number one was also pretty handedly. Picked. I also picked The Godfather.
I also picked The Godfather for number one.
Oh, well.
Janet?
I picked Schindler's List.
Oh, no.
It's time to brawl, gents. Is anybody feeling particularly... I doubt you're going to be moving much, what? Carter.
No, I mean, we have three Godfathers against one Schindler's List, I think.
Oh, okay, never mind.
I think the Godfather's number one.
Wait, no, I just... Godfather?
Godfather. Godfather. Schindler's List.
Oh, yours was The Godfather.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, mine was Schindler's List. Okay, never mind. I'm sorry.
Like, it's 3-1. I think that's three to one. Wait. That's The Godfather.
That is what it is.
Don't worry, you don't have to push too hard. My number two is Schindler's List.
Oh, well, good. Glad to hear it. Goodness. Sorry. Oh, my mind was
My
just,
number two oof. Is The Departed.
Okay.
Oh, my number two is Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. So, Schindler's List.
Schindler's List, I think,
takes number
takes
two.
Takes number two.
Right.
Okay, we go down to threes for everybody?
My number three is Schindler's List.
My number three is Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
My number three is Birdman.
Damn.
Yeah, and my number three is Schindler's List.
So
The Departed is number four.
The Departed is number four.
Is number four.
That,
I think so.
That's fine.
I'm so sorry. This was
fine, but I don't like the Birdman score.
This was
that was the easiest thing for me. Was I was like not feeling it. Number four. Like it was the only one that I was like, man, this is not my bag.
I actually love all four of these scores. And
same.
I talked about it with The Departed. I just think, for me, what does it is...
I want to hear
this. The Birdman score is so unique, like, to that movie. And so, like, characteristic, and it blends so well. And, like, The Departed does that to an extent with the tango some things stylistically. But like I said, whenever it's not... like the guitar feature, it sounds very generic mid-2000s action movie. Which for me, I was like, that's not, I don't think anything particularly special.
I mean, for me, I was actually between Schindler's List and Departed for last. And I think what swayed me to give it to the Schindler's List is that I just think the tone of the score is just like just completes the entire movie. And I think that while I was struggling with both of them, because they both kind of do use a lot of this, like you reuse the theme or multiple times. And I think in both of them, I kind of get lost in terms of like the music, and that I'm not like as definitive of what these tracks are, or like, I don't necessarily know if like, I don't necessarily like feel connection to them. I just kind of feel atmosphere and feel tone and stuff. I think, and while I praised The Departed for kind of having like this sort of metaphorical reasoning, I think overall I didn't feel like the tone of The Departed score like really supported the narrative. I just felt more of the connection for it in like a metaphorical sense, which is great, but I think it just comes behind the Schindler's List like tone. So. That was my reasoning.
So,
yeah, I see what you're saying. Like I said, I had a hard time distinguishing where anything in the Birdman soundtrack happened.
Yeah.
Not a huge fan of jazz. I mean, we talked about all the reasons I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It was an easy fourth place for me, but clearly it resonates more with you guys. I can't argue with that. I don't think it's any,
Yeah, it's subjective for music.
It's a shame. I do feel like I was like, oh, I have an argument. And I'm like, there's no budget. Like it's, you guys all have it at number four. Like, let us know.
Yeah, if it was a little bit more closer, we could have talked about it.
If we had I was gunning for a situation when you had Birdman at two. I was like, oh, if somebody puts it, like, if it ends up with a split where they would both end up at three, technically math wise, I was like, that's the fight. Like, that's where I'll have it. But if,
but there we go. Birdman saying goodbye.
Nope.
Or
The Departed saying goodbye.
The Departed saying goodbye.
It has departed.
It has departed
from this podcast.
And I think that's all. I think good.
Hold on. I want to call Phoenix out for this. Because I just said the departed is departed, and then then Carter was still talking, and then Carter was, and then Phoenix was like, "Yeah, it's departed." And I was,
I did the classroom thing where I
yes,
said
you
joke
said
louder.
My joke louder, and yeah. I'm not having.
I'm not
this
gonna
one.
Lie, I heard him, and I did not hear you, so that's exactly Ooh. What happened.
Yeah, Ooh. So I'm calling you out for it because your movie that you voted for number
there
two.
There we go.
Won.
Just let it be known, like everyone listening, that I said the joke, and then Robbie was claiming for.
Saying goodbye to
Phoenix has 2 minutes
the
of
departed.
Timeout.
Martin Scorsese's
you can't silence me.
Best director, best picture winning movie. That's
anyone
definitely
who tries
not
to help
his
him's
best.
Also getting silenced.
I'm not going to touch that. But yeah, so we still have for our finale next week. You can look forward to Schindler's List, The Godfather. And Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue.
And we'll be spending the full runtime of each movie talking about them. So
yes, we're gonna
I'm excited.
It's gonna be a live.
it's only been like 45
it's
seconds.
Be a live it's gonna be a live commentary on those movies, along with our podcast. So you can find me on Twitter at CA Spillier. It's like spill something you yard and an S. My recommendation this week. I'm sure we've talked about it before. I think when we did one of them in Fracas, but I just recently saw all three of them back to back. So I'm going to nominate, or I'm going to recommend the entirety of the Before trilogy. I think best viewed as one in one sitting. It's only about 3.5 hours long. It's like the length of a Lord of the Rings movie, but it's far more emotional, I think. just a story of two people falling in love, that love growing, falling apart. It's so impactful. I loved it so much. I think it's Linklater's best work. It's, oh my God, I have too many good things to say about it, but just go and watch it if you can. Try and watch all three of them. Go see them in a theater if you can.
Shen Did you I, recently see them?
In yeah, a, Shen okay. and I got to go see all three of them back to back to back
Sunday.
In a theater.
One of the
oh
best
my God.
Mr. Linklater there?
He was not there. I saw someone in the audience that looked kind of like him, but I was like, I don't think that's him. He also does not love to watch his own movies.
Did you see them at AFS? Or
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, I saw him at AFS.
Great.
Plus there was a chance he might be there then.
Yeah, there was an outside
comes, I think he only comes to one off.
I think he's working on something right now too. So,
is it Merrily We Roll Along?
No. He's already done Merrily for the year.
I didn't know if it was 2020 time yet. He
no,
shot summer 2019,
no.
right?
Yeah, he's got.
We can talk about this.
It's fine. Yeah, this doesn't need to be on air. Anyway, yeah. So the Before trilogy. Oh my God, it's so good.
It's the best.
It's so good.
I love it so
favorite.
Much.
Favorite. It's a favorite piece of media for sure.
So, Robbie.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and TikTok at Robbie DeShazer.
TikTok. Your TikTok's popping off, man.
It is. It is.
Hell yeah.
If you listen to this the day it comes out, which should be Friday the 21st of February
yes.
2020, tomorrow night is Allman and King Guillotine present It's Your Funeral yes. at Cold Town Theater at 11 p.m.
I've got my ticket. Do you have yours?
Well, I am working, but I'm going to rush after the after my shift yeah. to go,
do you have
go
yours?
See it.
For tomorrow?
For his
Saturday.
Saturday night.
For Saturday night. I do not have any
ticket. Get a ticket. They're still on sale, I believe. They should be sold at the door. But those are selling. I'm pretty excited about it.
I'm very excited.
We also did get renewed for an April 11th date.
Hey.
So that'll also be happening. I won't be there for that show, though. So, but still go see it. Go support those people. But if you have to choose one, come to the February 22nd date. Other than that, I'm going to recommend another trilogy, the Star Wars prequel trilogy.
Sure. I thought you were going to go with
topical
because this comes out the 21st. You would recommend the other thing that comes out on the 21st.
Nope.
No,
I'm not even nominating. I'm not even recommending that. I'm actually going to recommend the ABC musical comedy show Gallivant.
Oh, that's an excellent show.
I think that's recommended before.
I also think
sure.
I recommended it, yes, several seasons ago.
I thought we just talked about it a couple weeks ago when I joked about nominating it, and then I got a better response than...
I have no idea. But it's a great show. If you have not seen Gallivant, I think it's still all on Netflix.
It is still on Netflix.
Oh my god, the whole series is only like 16 episodes? Yeah. Or 20 episodes?
It's like 18, I think. It's right in the middle there.
God, it's so good.
It's original music from Alan Menken.
I know. Like, also, all the actors are great.
It's a very, it's
very
fun time.
Funny. Oh, if you haven't watched Gallivant, yeah, do yourself a favor. Go watch Gallivant.
Yeah. I don't know if it's been recommended or not. It's worth a second recommendation. I know. But yeah, that's me, Phoenix.
Yeah, so you can find me at Bombas. Thank you for unmuting me. Is my time out over?
I just wanted you to serve your time out a little bit when you were talking.
That's understandable. You can follow me at Bombas Phoenix on Twitter and on Letterboxd. I hope to tweet things you like. I'm still doing the list thing. Haven't missed a list, though I was close one week. My last one as a time recording was my mom's birthday. So I made a list of all of her favorite movies, and aww, I ranked them for how I like them. So it's very nice. Shout out to my mom. My recommendation, though, will be a little indie film called Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley
Quinn. No longer called that.
Actually, it is still called that.
And
is
it? Will...
They only changed the name for certain ticket-selling outlets. The official name of the film is still Birds of Prey or
really?
Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
I just figured since Draft House changed it on their website that it was.
Because the issue was the name was too long to fit...
The name Harley
ticket,
Quinn.
To fit into... Like the box to buy a ticket online.
Yeah, especially on cell phones.
Yeah, on a cell phone. And so they just shortened the title so that it wouldn't be like super small or like glitchy on the thing.
And
fair enough.
If you know me, you know I love long movie titles.
Yes,
I've like been Birdman. Very pro long movie title.
Or The Unexpected for Julie.
Yes. Or Doctor Strangelove. Or
How to Stop Wearing and Love the Bomb.
Or The Shining.
Yeah.
It is if you say The Shining.
And you know that's how I always say it.
Solo, A Star Wars Story.
That's not long enough.
Rogue One,
A Star Wars story. That's an extra word.
Or The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
Yes.
Great movie title.
That is an excellent
one. So I stay with the Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Good stuff.
It's great. And the movie's good. The movie's good too. Really enjoyed it. So go on and see it.
The title's long, but the movie, it's fine.
Title is better than the movie. And that's not saying the movie's bad, but the title's better.
The title is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
All right, guys. You can find me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5. Yeah. And Twitter at Wide and Nerdy, WEID and Nerdy. Okay, well, Carter took all the Before trilogy, couldn't even leave a part out.
I thought you might recommend another movie we watched.
No, I one that's that was, too obvious.
No, the other one we watched.
There's a lot of other ones.
The not typical one.
Oh, no, I don't think I will be, but show some love to Agent Cody Banks 2 Destination London in the near future.
I'm muting you.
Did you know that Agent Cody Banks?
I do not.
Robbie, do you want to talk about wrestling for a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about wrestling.
So, are you excited for WrestleMania?
I am very excited.
Okay, but
it's
Agent Cody
so
Banks
much worse
2
than the first one.
Agent Cody Banks 2
no,
shares
and
3
no.
major cast members with Game of Thrones. Did you know this?
Yes, but that doesn't make it inherently
it has
good.
Clarinet
Wild.
Performances. All of the city of London, you start off in the
dental surgery.
You've got Alfie Allen rapping in his German accent, playing the stringed bass. I don't know what you're not getting here. It's fantastic.
Well, first Agent Cody Banks has a nursery rhyme off in a locker room.
One of your points was just it has London.
London is fantastic. Anybody got a problem with London?
It kind of has London.
It has London. It's got the eye.
Didn't it ditch Hillary Duff?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Hillary Duff ditched it.
In exchange for British Hillary Duff lookalike.
Yes.
I hate that. Hillary Duff deserved better.
Great.
It was a dark time in Hillary Duff.
But the movie I'm actually going to be recommending this week, which I'm sure it's been a re-recommend, is Wild at Heart. Rewatched it recently.
This I love that fucking movie.
Has some big so Robbie DeShazer energy.
So good.
I love so it good. I each saw time it the first I see time. It. Oh. I mean, what's not to like? You got Nicolas Cage.
Wild at heart.
Being his truest self, I like to imagine. It's just the aesthetics of that movie are so wonderful. It's captivating from beginning to end. It's weird. It's wild. It's insert Laura Dern quote.
Willem Dafoe pees in it.
Yes. And yes, there's...
And he wears a stocking on his head that makes his face all mushed up, and I love it.
One of two movies off the top of my head where you visibly watch Willem Dafoe urinate.
Yeah.
One of only two? I guess.
Other one being The Lighthouse off the top of my head.
Well, there's the third one, Spider-Man one.
Does he urinate in The Florida Project?
No. No, he's the stable one in The Florida Project, remember?
Oh, yeah. Unstable people pee.
I mean, we're not talking like Tom Hanks level of peeing here. Tom Hanks pees a lot in his movies. I don't know if you'll ever noticed.
He pees for a while in A League of Their Own.
And there's a whole movie where a plot point is that he can't pee.
Yeah.
That's literally a plot point of an entire of one of the movies.
Wow. But yeah, go watch it. It's great. Or rewatch it. Fantastic movie.
This went off the rails kind of at the end.
You think?
It's okay.
We just talked about peeing.
Diane Ladd is fantastic in that movie.
Oh my God. The lipstick.
Everything about her character.
Her hands are always...
I can't... Did I not recommend this movie when I saw it?
I think this has been recommended like 3 times on the podcast.
But it's getting another call out.
Because I think you've
out.
Done it before. You've definitely done it before.
And I've like... And then she just did it again. I just... Oh. Needs talking about.
Okay. So the last episode of Film Frack is ever. I will recommend it again.
Good.
Just for the
And last. I'll see it at some point.
Watch it. I have it on Blu-ray. Is the Blu-ray here?
No, I think you took it back.
Okay. It's.
I want to see it.
It's whack.
I'll give you the Blu-ray.
It's great.
I want to see it.
It's so good. We'll so watch good. It and then we'll watch Inland Empire.
What about Mulholland Drive?
I still need to see that.
You haven't seen Mulholland Drive?
I haven't.
Yeah, you should watch that before you see Inland Empire.
Well, yes. We'll do a double Mulholland feature of those. Drive? Those will probably work together good. Better.
Yes.
Wait, but then what about me seeing Wild at Heart?
Yes, we'll just watch that on your own.
We'll watch Wild at Heart.
Oh, yeah. So we're not watching Inland Empire.
No, we are still watching Inland Empire. We'll watch all three.
So it's a triple feature.
Yes.
It's a weekend.
Once again, we don't need to talk about this on the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in again next week for another brand new episode of Film Fragus, our season 9 finale. We'll, of course, have a bonus episode after that. And then season 10, baby. Big milestone. So... Keep your ears peeled. Phoenix.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. As always, remember to like and subscribe on all of our social media platforms. We have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Film Fracas. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. Thank you so much for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. 5208 Media.